grasped her ponytail in his hand, pulling her head back, hard. "Get away from her!" I try to shout at them, but they can't hear me. I try to move, but I'm frozen on the staircase from my childhood. Her grey eyes are wide, afraid, and absolutely fucking lifeless as she looks at me while a purple bruise already begins forming on her cheek.
"You don't love me,"
she whispers. Her eyes burn into mine as his hand creeps up and wraps around her neck.
"What? Yes, yes, I do! I do love you, Tess!"
I shout, but she doesn't listen. She shakes her head as he tightens his grip on her, and his friend reaches down between her legs.
"No!"
I scream one last time before she begins to fade in front of my eyes.
"You don't love me."
Her eyes are bloodshot from his assault, and I can't do a damn thing to help her.
"Tess!"
I flail my arm out across the bed to reach for her. The moment I touch her, this panic will go away, taking with it the fucked-up images of those hands wrapped around her neck. She's not here. She didn't come back. I sit up and click on the lamp on the nightstand and scan the room. My heart is hammering against my ribcage, and my body is drenched in sweat. She's not here. A light knock at the door sounds, and I hold my breath as it creaks open. Please be...
"Pardon?"
Karen's soft voice fills the room. "Fuck!" "I'm fine," I snap, and she opens the door further.
"If you need anything, please let me..."
"I fucking said I'm fine!" My hand swipes across the nightstand, knocking the lamp to the floor with a hideous crash. Without a word, Karen leaves the room, closing the door behind her, and I'm left alone in the darkness. Tessa's head lies on the counter, cushioned by her crossed arms. She's still in her pajamas, and her hair is in a nest on top of her head.
"I just need to take some Tylenol and drink some water,"
she groans. Landon sits next to her, spooning cereal into his mouth.
"I'll get you some. Once we get the car packed up, we can head out. Ken is still in bed, though. He had trouble sleeping last night,"
Karen says. Tessa looks up at her, but stays silent. I know she's thinking, did they all hear me screaming like a pathetic little bitch? Karen walks over to open a drawer and grabs a couple of foil packets. I watch all three of them, waiting for someone to acknowledge me. No one does.
"I'm going to go pack. Thank you so much for the Tylenol."
Tessa's voice is soft as she stands up from her seat at the counter. She takes the medication quickly, and when she sets the glass of water back onto the counter, her eyes meet mine, but she quickly looks away. It's only been one night without her, and already I miss her so much. I can't get the haunting images from my nightmare out of my mind, especially when she walks past me with no emotion at all. Nothing to let me know that I'll be okay. The dream felt so real, and she's being so cold. I stand still for a moment, debating whether or not to follow her, but my feet decide for me as they scale the stairs. When I enter the room, she's kneeling down, unzipping the suitcase.
"I'm just going to pack everything, then we can go,"
she says without turning around. I nod, then realize that she can't see me.
"Yeah, okay,"
I mutter. I don't know what she's thinking, what she's feeling, or what I should say. I'm fucking clueless, as usual.
"I'm sorry,"
I say too damn loud.
"I know,"
she replies quickly. Her back is still turned to me as she begins to refold my clothes from the dresser and floor.
"I really am. I didn't mean what I said.
I need her to look at me so I can be reassured that my dream was just that."
"I know you didn't. Don't worry about it."
She sighs, and I notice the way her shoulders are slumped lower than before.
Are you sure? I said some fucked up shit.
You're broken, Harden, and I can't fix you.
That was the worst possible thing she could have said to me. She finally realizes how fucked up I am, and more importantly, she realizes that there's no cure for what's wrong with me. No one can fix me if it isn't her.
So did I. It's fine. I have a really bad headache. Can we talk about something else?
Of course. I kick at a piece of the lamp I broke last night. I have to owe my father and Karen at least 5 fucking lamps by now. I feel slightly guilty for snapping at Karen last night, but I don't want to bring it up to her first, and she's probably too polite and understanding to bring it up herself.
Can you get your stuff from the bathroom, please?
Tessa asks. The remainder of my time at that damn cabin is spent this way, watching Tessa as she packs our things and cleans up the broken lamp without another word to me, without really looking at me.
Chapter 52, Tessa. I'm so thrilled that we got to see Max and Denise again. It's been years, Karen gushes as Ken starts the SUV. The bags have been placed securely in the back, and I borrowed Landon's headphones to distract myself during the drive.
It was nice. Lillian has grown so much.
Ken appeases Karen with a smile. She has. She's a beautiful girl. I can't help but roll my eyes. Lillian was nice and all, but after spending hours under the impression that she was interested in Harden, I'm not sure if I'll ever care for the girl. I'm grateful that the chances of me seeing her again are slim to non-existent.
Max hasn't changed over the years,
Ken remarks, his voice low and disapproving. At least I'm not the only one who doesn't care for his arrogance and haughty attitude.
Do you feel any better?
Landon turns around to ask me. Not really, I sigh. He nods.
You can sleep it off during the drive. Do you want a bottle of water? I can get it,
Harden interjects. Ignoring him, Landon grabs a thing of water from the small cooler on the floor in front of his seat. I thank him quietly and push the earbuds into my ears. My phone freezes repeatedly, so I turn it off and on again, hoping it will work. This drive will be miserable if I can't drown out the tension with music. I don't know why I never did this before the Great Depression, when Landon had to show me how to download music. I smile slightly at the ridiculous nickname I've given those long days without Harden. I don't know why I'm smiling, given that those were the worst few days of my life. I feel a similar sensation now. I know that time is coming again.
What's wrong?
Harden leans down to speak into my ear, and on reflex, I jerk away. He frowns and doesn't make a move to touch me again. Nothing. My phone is just... it's junk. I hold the device in the air.
What are you trying to do, exactly?
Listen to music and hopefully sleep, I whisper. He takes the phone from my hand and messes with the settings.
If you listened to me and got a new phone, this wouldn't happen.
He scolds. I bite my tongue and stare out the window while he attempts to fix my phone. I don't want a new one, and I don't really have the money to get one right now anyway. I have an apartment to find, new furniture to buy, bills to pay. The last thing on my mind is paying hundreds of dollars for something I already paid money for recently.
It's working now, I think. If not, you can just use mine,
he says. Use his? Harden is voluntarily offering to allow me to use his phone? This is new. Thanks, I mutter, and scroll through the song list on my phone before choosing. Soon music floods through my ears and enters my thoughts, drowning out my inner turmoil. Harden leans his head against the window and closes his eyes, the dark rings beneath them emphasizing his lack of sleep. A wave of guilt hits me, but I push it back. Within minutes, the calming music coaxes me to sleep.
Tessa.
Harden's voice wakes me.
Are you hungry?
No, I groan, not wanting to open my eyes.
You're hungover. You should eat,
he says. Suddenly I realize that I'm feeling the need for something to absorb all that stomach acid. Fine, I say, giving in. I don't have the energy to put up a fight today anyway. Minutes later, a sandwich and fries are placed on my lap and I open my eyes. I pick at the food and lay my head back on the seat after finishing half of it. But my phone has frozen yet again. Seeing me start to futz with it, Harden pulls my earbuds out of my phone and plugs them into his.
Here.
Thanks. He's already opened the music app for me. A long list appears on the screen, and I scroll through to find anything familiar. I almost give up, but then my eyes move to a folder named T. I look over at Harden, whose eyes, surprisingly, are closed and not watching me. When I tap the folder, all of my favorite music appears, even songs that I've never mentioned to him. He must have seen them on my phone. Things like these make me question myself. The small, thoughtful gestures that he tries to conceal from me are my favorite things in the entire world. I wish he'd stop hiding them. With a gentle nudge, it's Karen who wakes me this time. Wake up, dear. I look over and see Harden is asleep. His hand is on the seat between us, his fingers barely touching my leg. Even in his sleep, he gravitates to me. Harden, wake up. I whisper, and his eyes fly open, wide and immediately alert. He rubs them, then scratches his head and stares at me, gauging my expression.
Are you okay?
He asks quietly, and I nod. I'm trying to avoid any confrontation with him today, but I'm growing nervous at his calm demeanor. It's usually a precursor to a blow-up. We file out of the car, and Harden walks to the back to retrieve our bags. Karen wraps her arms around me and hugs me tight. Tessa, dear, thank you again for coming. It was a lovely time. Please come visit soon, but in the meanwhile, take Seattle by storm. When she pulls away, her eyes are full of tears. I'll visit soon. I promise. I hug her again. She has always been so kind and supportive of me, almost like the mother I never had.
Good luck, Tessa, and let me know if you need anything. I have a lot of connections in Seattle.
Ken smiles and awkwardly wraps an arm around my shoulder.
I'll see you again before I leave for New York, so no hugs for you yet,
Landon says, and we both laugh.
I'll be in the car,
Harden mumbles and walks off, not even saying goodbye to his family. Watching him go, Ken says to me,
He'll come around, if he knows what's good for him.
I look at Harden, who is now sitting in the car. I sure hope so.
Going back to England isn't good for him. He has too many memories, too many enemies, too many mistakes there. You're what's good for him, you and Seattle.
Ken assures me, and I nod. If only Harden saw it that way. Thank you again. I smile at them before joining Harden in the car. He doesn't say a word when I get in. He only turns on the radio and raises the volume up high, so I know he doesn't want to talk. I wish I knew what went on inside his mind at times like this, when he's so unreadable. My fingers fiddle with the bracelet he gave me for Christmas, and I stare out the window as the drive continues. By the time we park at the apartment, the tension I feel between us has grown to an unbearable level. It's driving me insane, yet he doesn't seem to be affected at all. I move to get out, and Harden's large hand reaches over to stop me. He brings his other hand to my chin and tips my head up so I have to look at him.
I'm sorry. Please don't be upset with me,
he says quietly. His mouth inches from mine. Okay, I breathe, inhaling his minty scent.
You're not okay, though. I can tell. You're holding back, and I hate it.
He's right. He always knows exactly what I'm thinking, but yet he's so clueless at the same time. It's a confusing contradiction. I don't want to fight with you anymore.
So don't,
he states, as if it's that simple. I'm trying not to, but so much happened during that trip. I'm still trying to process it all, I admit. It started with me finding out that Harden sabotaged my apartment and ended with him calling me a selfish bitch.
I know I ruined the trip.
It wasn't only you. I shouldn't have spent time with...
Don't finish.
He interrupts and drops his hand from my chin.
I don't want to hear about it.
Okay. I glance away from his intense stare and he puts his hand over mine, squeezing gently.
Sometimes I get... Fuck.
He sighs and starts again.
Sometimes when I think about us, I start to get paranoid, you know? Like I don't know why you're with me sometimes, so I act out, and my mind starts making me believe that it won't work, or that I'm losing you, and that's when I say stupid shit. If you could just forget about Seattle, we could be happy finally. No more distractions.
Seattle isn't a distraction, Harden. I reply softly.
It is. You're only pushing it so much to prove a point.
It's amazing how his tone can change from soothing to ice in a matter of seconds. I look out the window. Can we please stop talking about Seattle? Nothing is changing. You don't want to go, and I do. I'm sick of going around and around about it. He pulls his hand away, and I turn back to him.
Fine. What do you suggest we do, then? You go to Seattle without me? How long do you think we would last? A week? A month?
His eyes regard me coolly, and I shiver. We could make it work if we really wanted to. At least long enough for me to try Seattle and see if it's what I want. If I don't like it, we can go to England.
No, no, no,
he says with a shrug.
If you go to Seattle, we won't be together at all. That will be it.
What? Why? I fumble the words and scramble for my next response.
Because I don't do long distance.
You also didn't do dating, remember? I remind him. It's infuriating that I'm basically begging him to stay in a relationship with me when I should be considering leaving him for the way he treats me.
Look how that's turning out,
he says cynically. You were literally just apologizing for lashing out at me 2 minutes ago, and now you're threatening to end our relationship if I go to Seattle without you? I gape while he nods slowly. So let me get this straight. You offered to marry me if I don't go, but if I do go, you're breaking up with me? I wasn't prepared to bring up his offer, but I couldn't stop the words from coming.
Marry you?
His mouth falls open and his eyes narrow. I knew I shouldn't have mentioned it.
What?
You said that if I chose you, you'd marry me. I know you were drunk, but I thought maybe...
You thought what? That I would marry you?
As he speaks these words, all of the air in the car disappears, and breathing proves harder and harder as the seconds pass in silence. I will not cry in front of this boy. No, I knew you wouldn't. I just...
Then why bring it up? You know how drunk I was and desperate for you to stay. I would have said anything.
My heart sinks at his words, at the scorn in his voice, like he's blaming me for believing the bullshit that comes out of his mouth. I knew insulting me would be his reaction, but a small part of me, the part that still had faith in his love for me, led me to believe that maybe he meant his proposal. This is déjà vu. I once sat here, in this car seat, while he mocked me and laughed at me for thinking we would begin a relationship. The fact that I'm just as hurt now, actually a lot more hurt than I was then, makes me want to scream. I don't, though. I sit there, quiet and embarrassed, just like I always do when Harden does what he always does.
I love you. I love you more than anything, Tessa, and I don't want to hurt your feelings, okay?
Well, you're doing an amazing job, I snap, and bite down on the inside of my cheek. I'm going inside. He sighs and opens his car door at the same time as I open mine. Going around to the back, he opens the trunk. I'd offer to help him carry the bags, but I really don't feel like interacting with him, and he'd just insist on doing it himself anyway, because more than anything, Harden wants to be an island. We walk through the complex in silence, and the only noise in the elevator is the whir of the machinery pulling us upward. When we get to our place, Harden puts his key in the lock, then asks me,
"Did you forget to lock the door?"
At first I don't realize what he's asked, but then I recover and reply, "No, you locked it. I remember." I watched him lock the door before we left. I remember how he rolled his eyes and made a joke about me taking too long to get ready.
"That's weird,"
he says, and steps inside. His eyes scan the room like he's searching for something. "Do you think..." I start.
"Someone was in here,"
he answers, becoming instantly alert as he presses his mouth into a hard line. I begin to panic. "Are you sure? It doesn't look like anything is missing." I walk toward the hallway, but he quickly pulls me back.
"Don't go in there until I look around,"
he commands. I want to tell him to stay put that I will check, but it's silly, really. The idea of me protecting him when in reality he'd be the one protecting me. I nod and a chill creeps down my spine. What if someone really is inside? Who would come into our apartment when we aren't here and not steal the giant flat-screen television I can still see hanging on the wall in the living room? Harden disappears into our bedroom and I hold my breath until I hear his voice again.
"It's clear."
He reappears from the bedroom and I let out a deep breath. "Are you sure someone was here?"
"Yes, but I don't know why they didn't take anything."
Me either. My eyes scan the room and I notice the difference. The small stack of books on the nightstand next to Harden's side of the bed has been moved. I especially remember the highlighted book I gave him being on top, because it made me smile knowing he was reading it over again.
It was your fucking dad,
he suddenly shouts. What? If I'm honest, the thought was already planted in my mind, but I didn't want to be the one to say it.
It had to be him. Who else would know we were gone and come into our home but not steal shit? Only him, that stupid drunk motherfucker.
Harden!
Call him, right now,
he demands. I reach for my phone in my back pocket, but then freeze. He doesn't have a phone. Harden throws his hands up like it's the worst thing he's ever heard.
Oh yeah, of course not. He's fucking broke and homeless.
Stop it, I say with a glare. Just because you think it may have been him doesn't mean you can say things like that in front of me.
Fine.
He lowers his arms and makes a sweeping gesture to escort me out.
Let's go find him then.
I walk over to our landline. No, we should just call the police and report it, not go on a manhunt for my father.
Call the police and say what? That your drug addict father broke into our apartment but didn't steal anything?
I stop in my tracks and turn to face him. I can practically feel my temper flaring through my eyes. Drug addict? He blinks rapidly and takes a step toward me.
I meant drunk.
He doesn't look at me. He's lying. Tell me why you said drug addict, I demand. He shakes his head, running his hands over his hair. He looks at me, then down at the floor.
It's just an assumption, okay?
And why would you assume that? My eyes burn and my throat aches at the thought. Harden and his brilliant assumptions.
I don't know. Maybe because that guy who showed up to pick him up looked like your everyday meth addict.
He looks up at me with softness in his eyes.
Did you see the guy's arms?
I remember the man scratching his forearms, but he was wearing long sleeves. My father is not a drug addict, I say slowly, unsure if I believe the words that are coming out of my mouth, but knowing that I'm not ready to face the possibility.
You don't even know him. I wasn't even going to say anything.
He steps toward me again, but I back away. My bottom lip trembles, and I can't look at him any longer. You don't know him either. And if you weren't going to say anything, then why did you? He shrugs.
I don't know.
My headache has now intensified, and I'm so exhausted that I feel like I could pass out at any moment. What was the point of saying it, then?
I said it because it just came out, and he broke into our fucking apartment.
You don't know that. He wouldn't. Would he?
Fine, Tessa. You go ahead and pretend that your dad, who, may I remind you, is a drunk, is perfectly innocent here.
His nerve is outstanding, as always. He is calling my father out for drinking. Harden Scott is calling someone out for their drinking when he gets so drunk that he can barely remember anything the next day. You're a drunk, too, I say, and then instantly cover my mouth.
What did you say?
Any trace of sympathy drops from his face. He eyes me like a predator, starts circling me. I feel bad, but I can see he's just trying to scare me into staying quiet. He's so unaware of himself and how he is. If you think about it, you are. You only drink when you're upset or angry. You don't know when to stop drinking, and you're a mean drunk. You break things and get into fights.
I'm not a fucking drunk. I'd stopped drinking altogether until you came along.
You can't blame me for everything, Harden. I ignore the way my mind is reminding me that I, too, have been turning to wine when I'm upset or angry.
I'm not blaming you for the drinking, Tessa,
he says pretty loudly. 2 more days and neither of us will have to worry about any of this. I stalk out into the living room and he follows.
Would you just stop and listen to me?
He says in a tone that's electric, but at least it's not yelling.
You know I don't want you to leave me.
Yeah, well, you do a pretty good job at showing me otherwise.
What is that supposed to mean? I tell you how much I love you on a constant.
I see the flicker of doubt cross his face as he shouts the words to me. He knows that he doesn't show his love for me enough. You don't even believe that yourself. I can tell.
Tell me this, then. You think you can find someone else to put up with your shit? Your constant whining and bitching? Your annoying need to have everything in order and your attitude?
He waves his hands in the air in front of him. I laugh. I laugh right in Harden's face. Even with my hand covering my mouth, I can't stop. My attitude? My attitude? You are constantly disrespecting me. You're borderline emotionally abusive, obsessive, suffocating, and rude. You came into my life, turned it upside down, and you expect me to bow down to you because you have this idea of yourself that is complete bullshit. You act like you're this tough guy who doesn't give a crap about anyone but himself, yet you can't even sleep without me. I look past every single one of your flaws, but I will not stand around and let you talk to me like that. I pace back and forth across the concrete floor, and he watches my every move. I feel slightly guilty for yelling at him this way, but all it takes is remembering the words he just said to me to refuel my anger toward him. And by the way, I may be a lot to handle sometimes, but that's because I'm so busy worrying about you and everyone else around me and trying not to piss you off that I forget about myself. So excuse me if I annoy you or bitch at you when you're constantly lashing out at me for no damn reason. Hardin's expression is grave. His hands are in fists at his sides and his cheeks are a deep red.
I don't know what else to do, okay? You know that I haven't ever done this before. You knew going into this that I'd be a challenge. You have no right to bitch about it now.
No right to bitch about it? This is my life, too. And I can bitch about it if I fucking want to, I say with a snort. He can't be serious. For a second, I thought the expression on his face meant he'd apologize for the way he treats me. But I should have known better. The problem with Hardin is that when he's good, he's so good. So sweet and honest that I love him so. But when he's bad, he's the most hateful person I have ever and will ever encounter. I walk back into the bedroom and open the suitcase, tossing my clothes into a pile inside of it.
Where are you going?
He asks me. I don't know, I answer truthfully. Away from you, I know that.
You know what your problem is, Teresa? Your problem is that you read too many damn novels and you forget that they're all bullshit. There are no Darcys. There are only Wickhams and Alec d'Urbervilles, so wake up and stop expecting me to be some goddamn literary hero, because it's not going to fucking happen.
His words wrap around me and seep into my every pore. This is it. This is exactly why we will never work. I have tried and tried with you until I'm blue in the face. I have forgiven you for the disgusting things you have done to me and to others, yet you still do this to me. Actually, I do this to myself. I'm not a victim. I'm just a stupid girl who loves you too much. Yet still, I mean nothing to you. Once I leave on Monday, your life will go back to normal. You'll still be the same Hardin who doesn't give a shit about anyone, and I will be the one who is in pain and can barely function. But I did that to myself. I let myself get wrapped up in you, wrapped around your finger, knowing that it would end this way. I thought that when we were separated before, you'd see that you're better off with me than alone. But that's the thing, Hardin. You aren't better off with me. You're better off alone. You'll always be alone. Even if you find another naive girl who's willing to give everything up for you, including herself, she too will grow tired of the back and forth and leave you just the way I... Hardin stares at me. His eyes are bloodshot. His hands are shaking, and I know he's about to lose it.
Go on, Tessa. Tell me that you're leaving me. Better yet, don't. Just pack your shit and get out.
Stop trying to hold yourself together, I tell him, angry but also pleading inside. You're trying not to break, but you know you want to. If you just let yourself show me how you really feel...
You know nothing of how I really feel. Leave.
His voice catches at the end, and I want nothing more than to wrap my arms around him and tell him I would never leave him. But I can't. All you have to do is tell me. Please, Hardin, just tell me that you'll try. Really try this time. I'm begging him. I don't know what else to do. I don't want to leave him, even though I know I have to. He stands there, only a few feet away from me, and I can see him shutting down. Every glimmer of light that my Hardin holds is disappearing slowly, burning out into darkness and taking the man I love further and further away from me. When he finally tears his eyes away from me and crosses his arms in front of his chest, I can see the way that he's gone now. I've lost him.
I don't want to try any more. I am who I am, and if that's not good enough, then you know where the door is.
That's what you want, then? You're not even willing to try? If I leave, this time it'll be for good. I know you don't believe me because I always say it, but it's true. Just tell me you're only acting this way because you're panicking over me going to Seattle. Staring at the wall behind me, he simply says,
I'm sure you can find somewhere to stay until Monday.
When I don't respond, he turns on his heel and leaves the room. I stand in place, shocked that he hasn't come back to put up more of a fight. Minutes pass before I finally pick up the pieces of me that he has shattered and pack my bags for the last time.
Chapter 53. Harden. My mouth keeps saying shit that my mind doesn't want it to say, but it's like I have absolutely no control over it. Obviously, I don't want her to leave. I want to pull her into my arms and kiss her hair. I want to tell her that I'll do anything for her, that I'll change for her and love her until I die. Instead, I walk out and leave her standing alone. I hear her rustling around the bedroom. I know I should go in there and stop her from packing. But what's the point, really? She's leaving Monday, anyway. She may as well leave now. I'm still astounded that she brought up trying a long-distance relationship. It would never work. Her being hours away from me, only calling once or twice a day, not sleeping in the same bed. I couldn't do it. At least if our relationship is terminated, I won't feel guilty for drinking and doing whatever the hell I choose to do. But who am I kidding? It's not even that I want to do anything else. I'd rather sit on the couch and have her force me to watch Friends over and over than spend 1 minute doing something without her. Moments later, Tessa appears in the hallway, dragging 2 suitcases behind her. Her purse is slung over her shoulder, and her face is pale.
I don't think I forgot anything except some books, but I'll just get new copies, she says in a low, shaky voice.
This is it. This is the moment I've feared since the day I met this girl. She's leaving me, and here I am, doing nothing to stop her. I can't stop her. She was always meant to do things greater than me, be with someone better than me. I knew that from the start. I was just hoping that somehow I would be wrong, as always. Instead of all that, I simply say, "Okay."
"Okay,"
she gulps and squares her shoulders. When she reaches the door, she raises her arm to grab her keys from the hook, and her purse slides down her shoulder. I don't know what's wrong with me. I should stop her, or help her, but I can't. Tessa looks back at me.
"Well, that's it then. All the fighting, the crying, the lovemaking, the laughs, everything. It was all for nothing," she says softly.
No anger tints her words, just a blank, blank neutrality. I nod, unable to speak. If I could speak, I would make this 100 times harder on both of us. I know it. She shakes her head and opens the door, holding it open with her foot so she can drag the suitcases behind her. Once she's through the door, she looks over at me and says so quietly that it's barely audible,
"I will always love you. I hope you know that."
"Stop talking, Tessa. Please."
"And someone else will too, hopefully as much as I do."
"Shh," I gently coax. "I can't listen to this."
"You won't always be alone. I know I said that. But if you just get some help or something, learn to control your anger, you could find some..."
I swallowed the bile rising in my throat and stepped to the doorway. "Go, just go," I say, and shut the door in her face. Even through its thick wood, I can hear her sharp intake of breath. I just slammed the door in her face. What the fuck is wrong with me? I begin to panic and let the pain course through me. I held it for so long, barely controlled, until she walked away. My fingers go to my hair, my knees hit the concrete floor, and I simply don't know what to do with myself. I'm officially the world's largest fuck-up, and there's nothing I can do about it. It sounds so simple. Just go to Seattle with her and live happily ever after. But it's not that damn simple. Everything will be different there.
She'll be absorbed in her internship and new classes. She'll make new friends, experience new things, better things, and forget about me. She won't need me anymore. I wipe at the tears pooling in my eyes. What? For the first time, I realize just how selfish I am. Make new friends. What's so bad about her making new friends and experiencing new things? I would be there right next to her, experiencing them too. Why did I go to such lengths to keep her from Seattle instead of embracing this opportunity for her? This opportunity to prove that I could be part of something she wanted. That's all she asked of me. And I couldn't fucking deliver. If I call her right now, she'll turn the car around and I can pack my shit and find her somewhere, anywhere, to live in Seattle. No, she won't. She won't turn around. She gave me the chance to stop her, and I didn't even try. She even tried to make me feel better while I was watching every ounce of faith she had in me die right in front of my eyes. I should have been comforting her, but instead I slammed the door in her face. "You won't always be alone," she said. She's wrong. I will be. But she won't. She'll find someone to love her the way that I couldn't. No one will ever love that girl more than me. But perhaps they can show her how it feels to be loved. How it feels to have someone love you despite all the shit you put them through. The way she was always there for me. Always. And she deserves to have that. Thinking about the fact that getting what she deserves means being with someone else makes it hard for me to breathe. But this is the way it should be. I should have let her go a long time ago, instead of sinking my claws further into her and making her waste her time on me. I'm divided. Half of me knows she'll come back to me tonight, maybe tomorrow, and forgive me. But the other half of me knows she really is done trying to fix me. Sometime later, I pull myself up from the floor and pad into the bedroom. When I get there, I nearly collapse again. The bracelet I had made for her sits on top of a piece of paper, alongside her e-reader and a copy of Wuthering Heights. I pick up the bracelet, twirl the infinity heart charm between my fingers, and look at the matching tattoo on my wrist. Why would she leave this here? It was a gift from me to her, at a time when I was desperate to show my love for her. I needed her love and forgiveness, and she gave it to me. To my horror, the piece of paper under the bracelet is the handwritten letter that I wrote her. As I unfold it and read it over, my chest is slowly ripped open and its contents are tossed onto the hard floor. Memories flood my fucked up mind. The first time I told her that I loved her, then took it back. The date with the blonde girl that I tried to replace her with. The way I felt when I saw her standing in the doorway after reading the letter. I continue reading. You love me when you shouldn't, and I need you. I have always needed you and always will. When you left me just last week, it nearly killed me. I was lost. So completely lost without you. I went on a date with someone last week. I wasn't going to tell you, but I can't stand to chance losing you again. My fingers tremble, and I nearly tear the flimsy paper, trying to hold it still enough to read. I know you can do better than me. I'm not romantic. I won't ever write you poetry or sing you a song. I'm not even kind. I can't promise that I won't hurt you again, but I can swear that I will love you until the day that I die. I'm a terrible person, and I don't deserve you, but I hope that you'll allow me the chance to restore your faith in me. I am sorry for all the pain I have caused you, and I understand if you can't forgive me. She did forgive me, though. She's always forgiven me for my wrongs, but not this time. I was supposed to be restoring her faith in me, yet I continued to hurt her over and over again. My hands work quickly, tearing the pathetic confession into pieces.
Falling, they swirl around before settling into a scattered pattern on the cold concrete.
See, I destroy everything. I know how much that damn thing meant to her, and I turned it into a pile of shit. No, 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 no!
I scurry to the ground and frantically try to gather the pieces and restore the page. But there are too many little bits. None of them line up, and I keep dropping them back onto the floor and watching them float here and there. This must be how she felt, trying to put me back together. I stand and kick my boot at the pile of scraps I've gathered, before quickly bending down and picking them up again and putting them in a pile on the desk. Covering them with a book so they can't blow away, I see I've grabbed Pride and Prejudice. Of fucking course. I lie back on the bed and wait for the sound of the door clicking open, signaling her return. I must wait there for hours and hours, but the click never comes.
Chapter 54, Tessa. I lie to Steph. I don't want to tell anyone about my relationship problems, especially right now when I haven't had a chance to process what just happened. And that's exactly why I called Steph. Landon is too close to the situation, and I don't want to trouble him again. I have no other options, which is what happens when you have exactly one friend and they happen to be your boyfriend's stepbrother. Well, ex-boyfriend now. So when Steph sounds concerned on the phone, I tell her, "No, no, I'm fine. I just... Harden is... he's out of town with his father, and he locked me out, so I need somewhere to stay until he comes home Monday."
"Sounds like Harden," she says,
and I feel relieved that my lie has worked.
"Okay, come on over. Same room as before. It'll be just like old times,"
she goes on cheerily, and I try to muster a little laugh. Great. Old times.
"I'm supposed to be going to the mall with Tristan later, but you can hang out here if you want, or come along. It's up to you."
"I have a lot to do to get ready for Seattle, so I'll just hang around the room if that's all right."
"Sure, sure."
Then she adds,
"I hope you're ready for your party tomorrow night."
"Party?" I question. "Oh yeah, the party. I've been so preoccupied with everything that I forgot about the party Steph planned for my going away. As with Harden's birthday party, I'm pretty sure his crew would be hanging out and drinking regardless of whether I showed up or not. But she seems like she really wants me to go, and since I'm asking her this big favor, I want to be nice."
"One last time, come on. I know Harden probably said no, but..."
"Harden doesn't decide what I do," I remind her, and she laughs.
"I know. I'm just saying we won't ever see each other again. I'm moving and so are you," she whines.
"Okay, let me think about it. I'm on my way over now," I say, but instead of heading straight to her dorm, I drive around a bit. I have to make sure I'll be able to hold myself together in front of her. No crying at all. No crying, no crying. I bite down on my cheek again to stop myself from giving in to the tears. Luckily, I'm used to the pain by now. I'm practically numb to it. By the time I get to Steph's room, she's in the process of getting dressed. She's pulling a red dress down over some black fishnet stockings when she opens the door with a smile. "I've missed you," she squeals and pulls me in for a hug. I nearly lose it, but I hold firm. "I missed you too, even though it hasn't been that long," I smile, and she nods. It feels like ages ago that Harden and I met her at the tattoo shop, not a mere week.
"Guess so. It seems like it, though."
She grabs a pair of knee-high boots from her closet and sits down on the bed.
"I shouldn't be gone too long. Make yourself at home. But don't clean anything," she says,
noticing the way my eyes are scanning the messy room. "I wasn't going to," I lie.
"You so were, and you probably still will," she laughs,
and I try to force myself to do the same. It doesn't work, and I end up making a noise between a snort and a cough, though fortunately she doesn't call me out on it.
"I already told everyone you'd be there, by the way. They were excited," she adds right as she walks out of the room and shuts the door.
I open my mouth to protest, but she's already gone. This room brings back too many memories. I hate it, but love it at the same time. My old side is still empty, although Steph has covered the bed in clothes and shopping bags. I run my fingers along the floorboard, remembering the first time Harden slept in the small bed with me. I can't wait to get away from this campus, from this entire town and all the people in it. I've had nothing but heartbreak since the day I arrived at WCU, and I wish I'd never come in the first place. Even the wall reminds me of Hardin, and the time he tossed my notes around the room, making me want to slap him, until he kissed me, hard, up against it. My fingers move to my lips, tracing the shape of them, and they tremble at the thought of never kissing him again. I don't think I can stay in this room tonight. My mind will be reeling the entire time. Memories will be haunting me, playing behind my eyes each time they close. Needing to find something to do to keep myself distracted, I take out my laptop and try to search for somewhere to live in Seattle. Just as I suspected, it's a lost cause. The only apartment that I can find is a 30-minute drive from Vance Publishing's new office, and it's slightly over my budget. I save the phone number in my cell anyway. After another hour of searching, I end up swallowing my pride and call Kimberly. I didn't want to ask her if I could stay with her and Christian, but Hardin has left me no choice. Being Kimberly, of course, she happily obliges, emphasizing how delighted they'll be to host me at their new house in Seattle, and bragging a little that it's even bigger than what they're in now. I promise her that I won't stay longer than 2 weeks, hoping to buy myself enough time to find an affordable apartment that doesn't come with bars across the windows. Suddenly, I realize that with all the Hardin drama I've been dealing with, I'd almost forgotten about the mess at the apartment and the fact that someone broke into it while we were gone. I'd like to think it wasn't my father, but I just don't know if I can believe that. If it was him, he didn't steal anything. Maybe he just needed a place to stay for the night and he didn't have anywhere else to go. I pray that Hardin doesn't hunt him down and accuse him of the break-in. What would be the point? Still, I probably should try to find him first. But it's getting late, and honestly, I'm a little afraid to be on that side of town alone. I wake up when Steph stumbles into the room around midnight, tripping over her own feet as she falls onto her bed. I don't remember falling asleep at the desk, and my neck aches when I lift up my head. When I run my hands over it, it hurts worse than before.
"Don't forget your party tomorrow," she mumbles, and passes out almost immediately.
I walk over and take her boots off her feet while she begins to snore, quietly thanking her for being a good friend to me and letting me stay in her room with only an hour's warning. She groans and says something incoherent before rolling over and snoring again. I've been lying in my old bed reading all day. I don't want to go anywhere or talk to anyone, and I especially don't want to run into Hardin, though I doubt I would. He has no reason to be anywhere near here, but I'm paranoid and heartbroken and don't want to take any chances. Steph doesn't wake up until after 4 in the afternoon.
"I'm going to order pizza. Do you want some?"
she asks, wiping last night's heavy eyeliner from her eyes with a small napkin from her purse. "Yes, please." My stomach growls, reminding me that I haven't eaten once today. Steph and I spend the next 2 hours eating and talking about her upcoming move to Louisiana and how Tristan's parents are less than pleased with him transferring schools because of her. "I'm sure they'll come around. They liked you, right?" I encourage her.
"Yeah, sort of. But his family is obsessed with WCU and something like legacy, blah, blah, blah."
She rolls her eyes and I laugh, not wanting to explain to her what it means to families to continue a legacy.
"So the party. Do you know what you're wearing yet?"
she asks, smiling wickedly.
"Or do you want to borrow something of mine for old time's sake?"
I shake my head. I can't believe I'm even agreeing to this after... I almost mention Hardin, but I redirect. After all the times he forced me to come to these parties in the past.
"But it's the last one. Plus, you know you won't find anyone even remotely as cool as us to hang out with at the Seattle campus."
She bats her long false lashes at me, and I groan. "I remember when I first saw you. I opened the door to this room and nearly had a heart attack. No offense." I smile and she returns it. "You said the parties were big and my mother nearly passed out. She wanted me to switch rooms, but I wouldn't."
"Good thing you didn't or you wouldn't be dating Hardin,"
she says with a smirk, then looks away from me. For a moment, I fantasize what it would have been like if I had changed rooms and never seen him again. Despite everything we've been through, I would never want to take any of it back.
"Enough reminiscing. Let's get ready," she cheers,
clapping her hands in front of my face before she grabs me by the arms and drags me off the bed. "Now I remember why I hated communal showers," I groan while towel-drying my hair. They aren't so bad. Steph laughs, and I roll my eyes, thinking about the shower at the apartment. Every single thing reminds me of Hardin, and I'm doing my best to keep this fake smile going, but inside I'm burning. Finally, my makeup applied and hair curled, Steph helps zip me into the yellow and black dress that I bought just recently. The only thing keeping me standing and present right now is the hope that the party may in fact be fun, and I can have at least 2 hours of peace. Tristan arrives a little after 8 to pick us up. Steph refuses to let me drive because she plans on having me drink until I can't see straight, which is an idea I think I like. If I can't see straight, then I can't see Hardin's dimpled smile or scowl before me every time I open my eyes. Still, it won't stop me imagining him when my eyes are closed.
"Where's Hardin tonight?"
Nate asks from the passenger seat, and I panic momentarily. "Gone. Out of town with his father," I lie.
"Aren't you two leaving Monday for Seattle?"
"Yeah, that's the plan." I feel my palms beginning to sweat. I hate lying, and I'm terrible at it. Nate turns around and offers me a sweet smile.
"Well, good luck to both of you. I wish I could have seen him before he left."
The burn increases. "Thanks, Nate. I'll let him know you said that." When we pull up to the frat house, I immediately regret my decision to come. I knew this was a bad idea, but I wasn't thinking clearly, and I felt I needed a distraction. This isn't a distraction, however. This is one big reminder of everything I've been through and everything I've subsequently lost. It's almost humorous the way I regret coming here every single time, but somehow always end up at this damn frat house. "Showtime," Steph says, and hooks her arm through mine with a wide smile. For a second, her eyes brighten, and I can't help but feel as if there's something else behind her choice of words.
Chapter 55. Hardin. When I knock on the door to my father's office, I feel nauseous. I can't believe it's come to this, to me seeking him out for advice. I just need someone to listen to me, someone who knows how I feel, or close to it. His voice sounds from inside the room. "Come in, dear." I hesitate before entering, knowing this is going to be uncomfortable but necessary. I sit down in the chair in front of his large desk, watching his expression change from expectant to surprised. A little laugh escapes his mouth. "Sorry, I thought you were Karen." But then, seeing my mood, he stops, watching me carefully. I nod, then look away. "I don't know why I'm here, but I don't know where else to go." I lay my head in my hands, and my father takes a seat on the edge of his mahogany desk. "I'm glad you came to me," he says quietly, gauging my reaction. "I wouldn't exactly say I came to you," I remind him. I did, in fact, come to him, but I don't want him thinking this is some big revelation or some shit, even though it sort of maybe is. I watch as he gulps and nods slowly, his eyes moving everywhere in the room except to me. "You don't have to be nervous. I'm not going to throw a fit or break anything." I don't have the energy. I stare at the rows of plaques on the wall behind him. When he doesn't respond, I let out a sigh. Of course, that seems to prompt him. That sign of my defeat, and he says, "Do you want to tell me what happened?" "No, I don't," I say, and look at the books along his wall. "Okay." I sigh, feeling the inevitability of this moment. I don't want to, but I'm going to, I guess. My father looks puzzled for a moment, and his brown eyes widen, taking me in, watching me carefully, waiting for the catch, I'm sure. "Believe me," I say. "If I had anyone else to go to, I wouldn't be here. But Landon is a biased asshole and always takes her side. I know this isn't even half true, but I don't want Landon's advice right now. More than that, I don't want to admit to him what a dick I've been and the shit I've said to Tessa over the last few days. His opinion doesn't really matter to me, but for some reason it matters more than anyone else's. Save Tessa's, of course." My father gives me a pained smile. "I know that, son." "Good," I don't know where to start. And honestly, I'm still not sure what brought me here. I had every intention of going to a bar to have a drink, but somehow I ended up pulling into my father's... No, my dad's driveway. The way Tessa only says mother and father instead of mom or dad used to drive me insane. But now it's crept into my speech too. He's lucky I'm even referring to him as father or dad instead of Ken or asshole, as I've done for most of my life. Well, as you've probably guessed, Tessa finally left me. I admit and look up at him. He does his best to keep a neutral expression while he waits for me to continue. But all I add is, and I didn't stop her. You're sure she won't be back? He asks. Yes, I'm sure. She gave me multiple opportunities to stop her, and she hasn't tried to call or text in... I glance at the clock on the wall. Almost 28 hours, and I don't have the slightest clue where she is. I was expecting her car to be in the driveway when I arrived at Ken and Karen's. I'm sure it's one of the reasons I headed over here to begin with. Where else could she even be? I hope she didn't drive all the way to her mum's house. You've done this before, though, my father begins. The two of you always seem to find a way.
Are you listening to me? I said she isn't coming back.
I huff, interrupting him.
I'm listening. I'm just curious as to what makes this time different from the others.
When I glare at him, he's staring impassively at me, and I resist the urge to get up and leave his over-decorated office.
It just is.
I don't know how I know that, and you probably think I'm a dumbass for even coming here. But I'm tired, Dad. I'm so fucking tired of being this way, and I don't know what to do about it.
Fuck. I sound so desperate and fucking pathetic.
He opens his mouth a little, but he stops himself and doesn't say anything.
I blame you, I go on. I really do blame you. Because if you'd been around for me, maybe you could have shown me how to... I don't know. How to not treat people like shit. If I'd had a man in the house while growing up, maybe I wouldn't be such a shitty person. If I don't find some resolution for Tessa and me, I'm going to end up just like you. Well, you before you became this. I gesture to his sweater vest and perfectly pressed dress slacks. If I can't find a way to stop hating you, I'll never be able to... I don't want to finish the sentence in front of him. What I want to say is that if I can't stop hating him, I'll never be able to show her how much I love her and treat her the way I should, the way she deserves. My unspoken words linger there in the stuffy, wood-paneled study like a tortured spirit. Neither one of us knows how to exercise.
You're right.
He surprises me by agreeing at last. I am?
Yes, you are. If you'd had a father to guide you and show you how to be a man, you'd be better equipped to handle these things, and life in general. I've blamed myself for your... I watch as he struggles for the words, and find myself leaning forward a little.
Behavior. The way you are is my fault. It all stems from me and from the mistakes I made. I'll carry the guilt for my sins for the entirety of my life. And for those sins, I am so, so sorry, son.
His voice catches at the end, and suddenly I feel incredibly nauseous.
Well, that's great, that you can be forgiven, but the result is how I am now. What am I supposed to do about it now?
I pick at the torn skin around my fingernails, and note that my knuckles are surprisingly not busted, for once. Somehow that takes some of the anger out of me.
There has to be something,
I say softly.
I think you should talk to someone,
he suggests. But his answer feels insufficient, and the anger flares back.
No shit I should talk to someone. You don't fucking say.
I wave my hand into the open space between us.
What are we doing right now? We're talking.
I'm referring to a professional, he replies calmly.